Welcome, everybody. Good Life Housing Partners. It is our weekly podcast. This is episode 138, and we are sitting here in the downtown Los Angeles headquarters of GLHP, fresh off a Super Bowl loss for the 49ers, another win for the Chiefs. And Mr. David Fong has watched it in its entirety. He's somewhat nebulous to the rules, but he likes the game, I think. And he has watched it and enjoyed it. Mr. Fong, where does this find you on this fine Monday?
Yes, it was a very entertaining show.
Yes.
I did fall asleep. It was
a long game. It was a long game, my friend.
But overall, I watched most of it. So most of the commercials, which are always fun to watch.
Yes. Some good ones.
And it was, overtime. When the game went into overtime, in case those who haven't watched it. And so it was a very exciting game.
Spoiler alert right there, until
someone won.
Yes. Save the spoiler alerts, although I gave it away early. It was a good game. Record-breaking ad revenue, record-breaking ticket sale price, yes. Record-breaking city revenue, record-breaking on a number of levels. And then the game itself was just kind of okay for the first like hour and a half, like somewhere between 3:30, after the anthem and after the coin flip. It sort of was just kind of like,
well, it was a tough game.
Kind of boring.
It was not a high scoring game.
Not at all.
But a tie game, and it was both teams were not, dominating. No one was dominating. They both had a few sparks here and there, but they also were challenged. I guess, supposed to be the best two teams, right? So
yes,
it made for what it was. A lot of interesting stats, though.
Yes, yes.
The Super Bowl. I didn't realize, I guess, the quarterback for San Francisco.
Brock Purdy?
Yeah, had an interesting little nickname. He was called Mr. Irrelevant.
Yes, last pick of the draft, Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, number 262.
Yep.
And I guess it shows because a lot of guys, I guess, who were picked much earlier are probably not in the NFL.
Or backups,
yeah. Yes. Definitely have the backup variety. The promise that they had shown never developed. The other thing, I don't know what, they haven't come out yet with the audience numbers, but last year, Super Bowl was 115 million.
Yes.
Which was considered the highest.
I think this is even higher.
I think so too, because of our good friend Taylor Swift.
Good old Taylor.
Who showed up and they had a whole bunch of, I saw it online, but I didn't see it during the game. I must have slept through it. Uh-huh. There was one shot where they had gone to Taylor. I guess she had chugged a glass of beer.
I heard about this too.
Smashed a cup of those little plastic.
Oh, that's funny.
But smashed it after she drank it on the little table in front of her. Supposedly that I think a lot of people got to like her more.
They
said a lot of NFL fans, the normal fans, were like, oh, she's one of us now. She's chugging the beer. And so
not so much.
Not so much. But, it's also one of the biggest sports betting days.
Yes.
The most sports betting days. With more than 67 million people wagering last year.
So heavy wagers out there.
This year will
far outpace that. Yes.
And then I think it will beat the numbers once the audience numbers come out. The other interesting, 1982 had the highest percentage of Americans who watched, which was 49% of Americans watched the Super Bowl.
Oh, I think this will probably lap that.
So this with the tail effect, this will be higher. As you mentioned, ad revenues were at peak $7 million or more for a 30-second spot.
Including RFK. Yeah. RFK getting involved.
I know.
Throwing down.
What is he doing?
I've never seen a presidential candidate do that.
Yeah.
That's to my knowledge.
I don't know if that's going to really move the needle.
I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about it, but I think it definitely brings somebody that a lot of people actually like and makes them somewhat of a, like, more relevant to a lot more people. I don't know.
That's true. Although the one thing I did notice too, by the way, on these ads too, and I didn't see it last year, so I don't know as much, but there was a lot of those QR codes.
Proliferation of the QR code. Definitely proliferation.
I guess that's definitely a trend.
Yes.
Speaking of ads, so I did see an interesting article. So I guess this whole sort of like bursting into the stratosphere of the cost for an ad started in 1984. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's interesting.
It started in 1984 because of the MacBook, Macintosh, Apple's...
the Mac computer.
Mac computer, yeah.
Yes,
Macintosh.
It was
called 1984, and then that was named in 1984 because they tried to make it sort of like a George world kind of thing.
Okay.
What would the world be? And so
this dystopian society.
Thing. Yes. And it was directed by Ridley Scott.
Yes.
Famous director who did Blade Runner and these other movies. And, you know, it all began Steve Jobs because I guess Fortune magazine had just named, you know, the IBM PC as some kind of winner or whatever. So Steve Jobs really mad. And he got his
very upset.
People said, we got to do something. Yeah. What are we going to do? And then someone had the idea, saying, well, you want to reach all Americans, you should advertise on the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, well, let's come up with this ad. And so they came up with this ad.
I'll see the Niners were playing.
Yeah. And so this 1984 ad is, it's kind of, and
are you going to describe the ad for us? Is that what you're trying to do right now? Yeah. Okay.
You got to watch it. You can find it on YouTube. It's just some interesting little things. There were some, they actually hired 200 white nationalists
nationalists.
Yes, because they played shaved head dudes who were like sort of like robots and drones, and it was 1984. It's about break free and
brainwashing
all this. And then they had this one woman.
Wait, what do you mean by white nationalists? I'm thinking Aryan Nation.
Like Aryan Nation.
Okay.
His name the party that they were from. And they said too towards the end. Ridley Scott said too towards the end of the filming, like, they had to hire all this extra security because people just start getting rowdy and getting into fights.
I can see that.
They're drawing rocks and things. And so the ad culminates with this woman smashing the voice of the leader who's been brainwashing people. And then it says, the world will be changed with the introduction of Macintosh.
And how much was the ad then? Must have been like,
it was $1 million.
$1 million then? Yeah. Okay, so $7 million over 40 years is not that much, actually. Yeah. That actually feels light now.
But they said that at that time, but apparently that ad had this big effect on everyone. And just started the
I was 5 years old, so I don't know.
So, yeah. So those are my little Super Bowl notes I thought was interesting. You know, the Mr. Relevant comment made me start thinking just on the real estate side.
Yes.
Like maybe we should start thinking too, like, you know, because they, I guess, and you know more about this than I do, going through the drafts and things, they do probably all sorts of analysis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looking at stats and scouts and all this.
Yeah.
But in the end, sometimes they just blatantly get it wrong, like Mr. Relevant. And so it made me think about us in real estate. We do a lot of analysis too, and we're always looking at, you know, sometimes,
good point.
Sometimes people overanalyze. And I was thinking about, like, are there asset classes or any investors? I don't know the answer to this. It's just something that made me think about when I read about
it. That we cast as irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah. So, or that, are we too blinded sometimes by the analysis that there is an investment strategy that might be staring us in the face or that we don't see that actually is something worthy of investing in? You know, and obviously you could be like the Warren Buffett kind of value investing and just, you know, he looks at companies that have products that you know, a lot of people have high demand for, and that you know, that's been around a long time and cash flow and all that. But I just made me think, like, are there some assets where we're shunning because of maybe media or what the rest of the herd is saying that we're not thinking about that maybe we should be thinking about it? So something to think about when you look at investment portfolios.
Interesting.
Speaking of San Francisco 49ers, let's talk a little bit about San Francisco. You know, as we talked before on the previous podcast about the doom loop, there's actually a guy out there now who, in his Wall Street Journal article, who's raised money to actually, basically, he believes he's going the other way. He's betting, he thinks San Francisco will come back. And this guy named Ian Jacobs, he was got some interesting credentials. He was a former Warren Buffett apprentice. Apparently, he interned and worked with Warren for many years and was pretty successful. And he's part of an heir to, in the real estate world, this Reichman real estate family, which is a big Canadian family that used to have a major company called Olympia in York, which they're famous development. They built Canary Wharf in London.
Yeah, Canary Wharf.
And they
it's my class office over there.
Yeah, and also World Financial Center, Manhattan. And they had, back in the 80s, when Manhattan was actually what he analogizes similar to what San Francisco is going to. There's a lot of crime in Times Square and Manhattan and things. And
crime filled.
And people shunned away from office buildings. And in Olympia, New York, the family bought a bunch of buildings, 8 Manhattan office buildings from this builder called the Eurus Building Corp. And, you know, they leased it up and, you know, eventually built the portfolio up to $10 billion of wealth. Wow. But then the markets collapsed after that and they lost the whole number of them due to bankruptcy. And they lost money also on Canary Wharf too, just the cost of development went over budget so much. So you know, the empire in 1991 grew to 10 billion, then fell to, by 2005 to 880 million. So it filed a lot of bankruptcies. But for some reason, he feels, but they were originally right about Manhattan. And so like, he feels that San Francisco is the same. Like we're experiencing, you know, I think there's differences between New York and San Francisco, of course, but he thinks, you know, there's opportunity here. He's raising money. He's raised over $75 million from other family offices and wealthy families to basically back him. Now in his offering memorandum, he's told people this may take up to 10 years,
yeah.
But his view is like companies and especially tech will be back. They're not going to abandon San Francisco. It's a, you know, it's now near term, it may look a little shady, yeah, and stuff, but they're going to come back. And these are such great prices. You got to get in now. This is the generation opportunity. And he's actually called his investment thing called Project Eurus in the name of that company where they bought those buildings in Manhattan. So yeah, he's betting big.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he's right.
I wonder if he's betting on Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, he might expand. He should reach out. And his background is not because he's a value investor like Warren Buffett. He buys companies. Mm. This is the first time he's actually kind of going into the old family business of development.
Hmm. So, interesting. That's a good story. So, what's this guy's name again?
Ian Jacobs.
Yes.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Related to San Francisco, just across the bay, Oakland,
mm-hmm,
another town that's kind of in a doom loop.
Yes.
Sadly, you know, a lot of crime now also.
Yes.
Just like San Francisco. In-N-Out Burger.
Yes.
Only In-N-Out Burger.
Yes.
Are you familiar with this? Hagenberger Road?
Yes. It's a very strong location.
It's going to close on March 24th.
Yes.
And it's the only In-N-Out Burger ever in the chain's history to close.
Really?
Because they've always been so fabulously successful, yeah, with the hamburgers.
Well, so we were actually talking about this earlier today. And so it's related to crime. And my first thought was like, how do you steal burgers? Because you got to pay for the burgers first and then you get them. Right, so what are you like jumping the counter?
Just steal
the
burgers, or
no, hold on.
Discouraging the customers.
No, do you know what the reason is? It's nothing to do with the business of the store. The store is actually in, like, I know the location super well. It's like on the way to the airport. It's right off the freeway. It's super visible. It like checks every retail box.
Okay.
And the price point is amazing. In-N-Out's price, like, it says super value, consumer good. The problem is because Oakland has so much crime, and that place is so frequented that, like, basically they were having, like, almost on the hour, somebody's car was getting jacked or, like, car right was outside. Getting robbed in the parking lot.
Okay.
And the In-N-Out was, like, sort of like, I don't know, I'm sure they have liability insurance, but at some point they were like, this is crazy. We can't, like, govern this, like, people robbing people's cars. And it happens, like, with crazy amounts of frequency in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
To the point where they were, like, filming this Berkeley student. And it was great. He's like, yeah, I basically now, wherever I park, I just leave my windows down because that way they won't break the window trying to figure out what's in my, like, glove compartment or something, because I have nothing. Like, I have literally zero.
Yeah, I'm going to pay for fixing the window.
Yes, I'm going to save myself from breaking the window. Although I think you should have that as, like, a bumper sticker.
Well, the other restaurant that closed late January, too, was the city's only Denny's closed.
Oh, yeah, that's also in the same region. Same area. Yeah,
it's been there for 54 years.
Yeah, I've been at Denny's multiple times.
And so Newsom said he's sending 120 highway patrol officers.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. And, thank you, Gavin.
Plus the lawyers from the Department of Justice and the National Guard. I didn't know the National Guard had lawyers, but to kind of help Oakland's prosecutors to kind of prosecute some of this crime.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's going to solve it. But very sad that there's this.
Well, I think one of the Oakland, too. Yeah, but one of the funny things that happens is that there was so much, like, concern and I'm from Oakland. Listen, I love Oakland. I think Oakland's amazing in certain parts. But there were so many people that were so up in arms about Oakland A's leaving. And this actually is a great example of why the Oakland A's are actually leaving, is because, like, you have a stalwart, like, business that's in and out that's literally never closed a location. Literally has locations now that are, like, close to, like, probably 67 years old. And this is the first one they're closing. It's not because the business is bad. It's because there's just so – outside the business, things that they can't control are totally affecting how they run their business.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened to the A's.
It's, you know, and you know, A's moving to Vegas. And where we had.
But people were up in arms.
Yeah. Well, no, it definitely seems like that, you know, sad. Like you said, you're Oakland.
I'm from Oakland. It's sad. It's sad, but it's like, it's not that, like, it's not that illogical. The illogical part is when you think they actually should stay.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point.
Yeah. They really need to fix it. San Francisco hotel rooms also for conventions are down 40% for 2024.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the, because, you know, you book for these big conventions, all these people are canceling.
Just think, we had one of our conferences that we go to that we're pretty involved with asked us where they should hold the distress conference. And should be more and more, actually more directly, should we, they were like, should we hold in San Francisco? And our direct answer was like, go almost anywhere else. Go to Sacramento, go anywhere you want to go, but do not go to San Francisco. Yeah. And of course, they're going to have it in San Francisco. So our opinion didn't matter on that one. But
well, maybe not. They might have. But like I said, a couple more, two more conventions canceled this weekend. And they're just, you know, they're just losing room nights. But you know, used to be 400. I think last year was 400,000.
But remember last year you guys went to a conference in San Francisco and we were pretty surprised how expensive the rooms were.
Yeah. But you know, and then I think also, like we've talked about, a couple of the biggest hotels, the city's largest hotels, the Hilton's in Union Square, you know, they already broke, they violated their loan payments, their default. And also the fourth largest hotel in the city, Park 55, which is just around the corner.
Yeah.
But then also was,
that's also in default.
Default. Yeah.
Damn.
So it's not, yeah, not looking
good. No bueno.
Barry Sternlicht also round out this talk about office. He says we're in an existential crisis in office. He thinks that, you know, in his opinion, the office market, and this is just broad numbers, is overall used to be valued about $3 trillion, and he thinks today's value is about $1.8 trillion. So we're basically lost $1.2 trillion in value in office buildings in the U.S. Wow.
Yeah,
and he calls it a crisis, an existential crisis, because in his mind, the rest of the world is back to office.
Yeah,
he said Germany, he said Korea, he said other international cities, and he says, but for some reason, in the United States, this ain't happening. And he, you know, it's because, you know, the U.S. yeah, you know, hybrid work world.
Yeah,
and that is common, and we don't seem to want to lose that.
So he
warns about that. For the
part about Barry that's a little bit harder to, because I think he makes a very general statement on all this. People are back in office, which is true. I don't know what percentage of that is like knowledge work that we have. That's such a large part of office work in America. Like, I don't know what percentage of that is knowledge work, meaning that it is the type of work where it's either like you're doing a very specific task, like accounting, mm-hmm. or something like very specific that you don't have a lot of interaction, where you may or may not need to necessarily be in the office. So I think there's some of that that's back in office in Korea and Germany and all these places.
But it's an interesting cultural thing, if you think.
But it is cultural, yes. Yeah. I totally think it's cultural. There's a big cultural
thing. I hadn't thought about that when I heard
that. Because part of it is the stigma of not being in the office. Mm-hmm. Right, there used to be a large stigma of like getting to the office first, or being early at the office, or whatever. People still have that stigma. Yeah. People just like when you're leaving, whose car is left because you're like, oh, you know, John's working late again. You know,
but well, it's definitely like I think about my visits to Hong Kong. Like, it's definitely a city where if you're that young generation Asian, you're supposed to be doing white collar jobs or whatever. Like, you're in an office, you're not working in your little apartment in Hong Kong somewhere, just doing remote work.
Yeah.
I can see it's part of cultural ethos. Switching gears a little bit, there was a little bit of a stock scare last week and the week before. I guess, I don't know if you're following this, New York Community Bancorp, which had purchased a lot of Signature Bank assets. They reported their year earnings and it was a lot bigger loss. It was a very dismal earnings report they gave. Moody's even downgraded their earnings to junk stats. And they brought back a retired chairman to try to right the ship. And now remember, this is not the bank that failed. This is the bank that bought the Signature Bank assets that the bank had failed. They bought $13 billion of their commercial industrial loan portfolio and a lot of the rent-stabilized properties to loans that they had. So, you know, for a minute there, people got to worry, like, is this going to spark something? So something to keep an eye on.
Yes.
This New York Community Bank card.
Yeah, we'll see how that works out because that's a pretty big deal.
One last piece of real estate news I was going to talk about I saw last week too was CrowdStreet.
Yes.
I didn't realize.
Probably gone.
Well, are they gone? Or they're under attack right now.
I think they're gone. After the Nightingale scandal.
Yeah, yeah, because it's Nightingale scandal. I didn't realize that they were being sued by all these investors because...
of misrepresentation, basically.
Yeah, well, Nightingale committed fraud. It's very clear. There was like $1.5 million that was misappropriated. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to go into the closing of some properties to be purchased. And somehow, I don't know, they misappropriated Madoff style and used the money for like planes or something for the CEO. And so a group of investors have sued CrowdStreet because they raised the money and they're claiming they should have been more careful to make sure the money was put into escrow or done something to prevent this fraud. So now all these investors are trying to basically take them down as a company. I don't know. Have they gone out?
I thought they were out.
Oh.
I thought it was a headline that they're done.
Yeah. I just read about this lawsuit about them and how, you know, basically trying to stop them from operating. And I don't know if they're going to succeed. That's why I was like, oh, did they succeed? Because now, we've talked to those folks along with a bunch of other these crowdfunders. So I don't know if this means crowdfunding is dead.
No, I don't think crowdfunding is dead. I think what happened to CrowdStreet has resulted in this issue.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's fully dead. Although I don't know who's raising money either.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say it's a definite chilling effect.
Well, I think that the amount of what is being raised has been shrunk considerably. All right, let's do some content. Non-Super Bowl content.
My only other content was Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
Which after discussing the Amazon show, I tried to remember more details about the movie, and I happened to, as I was just surfing on YouTube, I just somehow it came up in my algorithm. They actually had the whole movie, which I was surprised to see on YouTube. And so I started watching it again, and I realized how completely different it was, as I mentioned last week, from the series. It was definitely, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, you know, all sorts of car chases and gun shootouts and all stuff. It was completely different.
Well, Amazon does that. They got it right with Reacher.
Yeah.
They totally changed it with Mr. and Mrs. Smith there, right?
Yeah, there you go. What about you? What was your content?
Well, beyond the Super Bowl, we're still watching Girls, which is, you know, oddly somehow poignant. And then I started watching Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But the show I really want to watch, I've heard a ton about good stuff about, is American Fiction. And it's supposed to be like this satirical look at African-American people in the U.S. But it's supposed to be awesome. Like, it's like
American Fiction. Amazon or Netflix?
It's a purchase.
Oh.
You got to buy it.
Oh, you got to buy it. Oh.
Yeah. In theater. In-home theater, baby. In-home theater. Oh. You got to buy it still. But I've heard like rave reviews, and it's like a 96 or 97 on Rotten Tomatoes. People have watched it like multiple times. It's supposed to be awesome. So that's on my content list. And then my upgrade is I joined a new gym, and they have an excellent steam room. And
you joined the gym just for the steam room?
Well, I joined the gym for the gym, and then I realized they have a good steam room. And I now remember how nice it is to shave after you get a nice steam. You don't have this problem, as I can see, or neither do you, young professor Jason over there, professional Jason. But I, as an almost daily shaver, nothing like a post-steam shave. Pro tip, if you want to get even closer, put the shaving cream on first and then go into steam. But it can be a little messy. But yes, get very clean shave.
Wait. You're doing, just so I understand this.
Yeah.
Because I've gone to saunas, steam room.
Yeah.
So you're doing the shave in the steam room?
No, post.
Post. Okay.
Yeah, you steam.
Then you put the shaving cream on.
If you pro tip is you put the shaving cream on so your pores are open and the shaving cream goes in a little bit and then you shave and it comes like right off. It's very like smooth. Okay. But that's not for everybody.
As a
non-shaver, you don't have to worry.
Occasional shaver. I shave every other day.
Honestly. Okay, well, occasional. So yeah, I'm a little more.
I don't have as a big a beard issue as you guys, but if I don't shave every day, it gets
mine's prickly. Cultural.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's in my upgrade. So a good steam room.
But where's the gym? Is the gym looking?
Oh, it's near our house. Any meal? I didn't have any great meal. Oh, I did actually. I did get the Mr. Beast burger. So Mr. Beast is the YouTube phenomenon, and he's
they have a retail location.
No, I don't. I don't think it's a retail location. I think it's just on Uber Eats.
Oh, well, wait. Where does Uber Eats get it from?
I think they have all these ghost kitchens. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Beats has a burger.
Okay. I thought he was and, like a.
No. He has a burger. Service. And it was okay. It's pretty good. It's a smash burger. It's pretty good. Not bad. It's actually relatively. It's not that expensive, actually, surprisingly. Not In-N-Out cheap, but like it's not that expensive. But it was pretty good. Mr. Beast burger.
Got it.
Any upgrades or meals for you?
No upgrades. Only meals was, you know, this past weekend was Saturday, which the first day of the Lunar New Year, or Chinese New Year, the Year of the Dragon. And so I had a dinner with producer Jason and my dog.
Oh, very nice.
The night before. And so we had a went down to the old local Chinatown. Actually,
oh, very cool.
Chinatown here in a long time. And we had some, you know, New Year's food and some Chinese soup.
Year of the Dragon, baby.
Year of the Dragon.
All right.
Sad part was the town there was pretty empty. That whole area around there. Although there's been a whole bunch of new apartments being built up there.
All right. That does it for us, folks. Thank you, everyone. Please do send any comments, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, I've got my phone.